This is Vatican Radio. I'm Tracy McClure. Imagine a world where rainbows abound, and reds, blues, and yellows are vivid splashes of color brightening up the canvas of your life. That's the dream world, the very real one, in which Sabria Ten Berken has found herself since she went blind at age 12. Born in Germany, Sabria is luckier than most. She went to a school where her teachers believed she and her blind classmates could do anything. Besides reading and writing, she learned how to play ball, ride a horse, and even go whitewater rafting, guiding her craft alone down the rapids. She went on to earn a degree in Tibetology and Central Asian Studies from Bonn University. Sabria is one of more than a dozen women speaking at the International Women's Day event, March 8th in the Vatican, Voices of Faith. The third annual storytelling event celebrating women from around the globe and their often unsung achievements is sponsored by the Catholic philanthropic Fidel Goetz Foundation and hosted by the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences in the very heart of the Vatican. In 1997, Sabria's sense of adventure led her to Tibet, where she discovered that the blind were often ostracized like sinners because popular belief held that in a past life they had committed some horrible crime. No stranger to isolation and exclusion as a child growing up herself, Sabria remembers the heartache of humiliation for an adversity over which she had no control. Changing the mindset became her goal. She coded the Tibetan alphabet in Braille, and with government support and together with her friend, Netherlands-born Paul Cronenberg, she opened Tibet's very first school for the blind. The two friends founded Braille Without Borders and have seen some 300 students pass through their doors. I sat down with Sabria and Paul to learn more about their school and what motivated them to start it up.
You, Sabria, lost your sight, from what I understand, at the age of 12. That must have been an earth-shattering moment for you, and you must have felt very angry and frustrated. But you've been able to change that around, and you call it actually a precious gift, your blindness now. How so?
In fact, I'm very, very grateful for everything that happened. It was not just a moment. It was years of, years of sorrow, I really must say, because I was isolated, I was discriminated. I was terrified of becoming totally blind, which I am now. And I was terrified of living in the dark. And this is something that, in my opinion, it's a myth. It's a myth of sighted people who want to make blind people or other sighted people believe that blindness is probably one of the worst things on earth. Now, when I decided to embrace blindness, when I decided to understand that there is an advantage of being blind, for example, you can focus, you can concentrate much better, you are not distracted by Hollywood and Bollywood. You learn how to communicate clearly and precisely, and you learn how to imagine things that are not obvious. And when I understood all these advantages, I said, okay, now I can embrace blindness, and I can also embrace the fact that I will live in the dark. And the interesting thing is that darkness never came. In fact, because of my imagination and because the brain plays a trick on most people who become blind, the world surrounding us becomes much more colorful and much more beautiful because we paint our own pictures. And how great is that?
That's wonderful. And Paul, you also, from what I understand, overcame certain adversities, certain challenges in your own life. How did they form the person you are today?
When I was 11, I had problems on my skin, and I went to see the doctor, and the doctor said, "What's that?" And I said, "Well, who's the doctor here?" So he didn't know really what it was. I had red spots on my skin, and he gave me some medicine, and he said, "In a week, everything will be gone." And unfortunately, he was right, because my skin was gone. Problem was gone, but my skin was gone as well. So I had no skin on my back for about 6 years. And that led to exclusion in a similar way that Sabria experienced this, because if you're different, people don't really know how to deal with you. And very quickly, kids are very, very mean. To Sabrina would say, you can walk straight, and she would fall down the stairs, and kids have fun.
With
me, they would come and they would smack me on my back, and they would have fun. And so we know both, I think, what exclusion means, but at the same time, I think that brings people together and to fight against this discrimination that's happening. So I'm the same thing. For me, it's I'm grateful to have gone through that. It was not a nice period, but afterwards you really understand what matters in life. And if you, I think that's the best thing that can happen to you. If you, if that filter has been already in, have been in, has been in place for you, that you know what to focus on, what really means something.
Wow, talking to you sounds like deja vu to me. I had similar problems as a kid growing up. I had eyesight problems, and kids would look at me and say, hey, you're looking somewhere else. You're not looking at me. Anyway, it was tough going through those periods. But I think, yeah, you rise above these things. And actually, I mean, I can see from you and your lives and what you've tried to do, turning this adversity into something extremely positive and helping other people, people who are in worse situations even than you find yourself in. One of the things that you have done, both of you together, is create this Braille Without Borders initiative in Tibet. Sabria, I believe that what brought you to that point was that you had been studying Tibetology and Central Asian Sciences at Bonn University, and that led you to Tibet, where you discovered that people with your disability are often ostracized and kept on the margins of society. But you decided there to do something about that. And together with Paul, you created this Braille Without Borders. Tell me more about it.
Yeah, well, when I came there and I discovered that blind people are seen as sinners or are seen as being punished for something they have done in their past life. Some people believe that blind people must have been murderers in their past life. And then on the other hand, I look at my own life and being a happy person, being grateful for whatever happened to me, I thought, hey, we can solve this contradiction. What I didn't want to create just a school where children are protected by the harsh society. I wanted to create a springboard that would empower the children to understand that they can do a lot, despite the fact that everybody believes that blindness is the end of the world, that they can understand that they don't have to be ashamed to be blind, that they shamelessly can jump back into society and say, hey, I'm blind, so what? I can do so many things. And maybe I cannot do, I cannot go to the kiosk and buy a newspaper and read it immediately. But I can do something that sighted people can never dream of doing. For example, reading and writing in the dark. And when I met Paul, Paul was actually the only foreigner that didn't think that I was totally nuts when I told him about this dream or this vision. Because everybody else would say, you're too small for this big idea. You know, you don't know Tibet. And it's true. I didn't know. I just spoke the language because I studied Tibetology. But I didn't really know the difficulties that would come up. And I must say, I'm also grateful for that, because my naivety would protect me from giving up too early. It would give me so much strength and so much hope in for the future, that something really terrific would come out of this idea. That I didn't feel that this is an endless task. So, and he was exactly the same. And he just told me, okay, let me know what happens. We exchanged addresses. And 1 year later, I had my invitation from the Tibetan Chinese government in my pocket and my ticket in my pocket. And I called all my friends and told them, well, I'm leaving for good. And Paul, I called up Paul and at his working place. He didn't say much. I said, Paul, we don't know each other that well. You can just wish me good luck. And he said, I come with you. So he quit his job.
Oh, my goodness.
And of course, his parents were a bit shocked, I guess, that he would run off with a German. That's for a Dutch person not necessarily the best thing to do. And and then with a blind German on top of it, and to a place they have never heard of. Later they became good supporters of us. But this, of course, is something when we tell this to people, a lot of people, they cannot identify with me because I'm an exot. I'm an alien. Yeah. But when he tells his story, and when he says, well, I quit my job and I just did it, you know, then people think, hey, maybe I can do the same. Maybe I can fulfill a long-term dream.
So you left your job and you went all the way to Tibet. And how many years ago was that? That was back in the 1990s, wasn't it?
It's 1997, that was. And 1998, actually 1997 we met in Tibet. And 1998 we went back together. And one of the biggest challenges we faced was when we started our project was when these young children came in. We started with five only. And, well, most of them, they came directly from a dark room because they were excluded from society completely. So one of the biggest challenges we faced was how can we give these kids hope for the future? And so we came up with a dream factory. We said, because for us, we love to dream. And the most beautiful thing about dreaming is that there are no limits. Anything is possible. So we asked our students, we said, we want you to dream about what it is that you want to do so that your life becomes about I want to do something rather than I have to. And so we gave them 1 week time to think about this. And there was Nobu, he's 7 years old at the time, or 8 years old, and he was having a big smile on his face and he said, I want to become a taxi driver. So, of course, he's blind. So then,
well, the taxi drivers,
they're
all blind.
Yeah. Yeah. You think they are.
So then we asked him, we said, wonderful. We said, okay, we believe in your dream. That's fantastic. Because we could also destroy his dream right there and then by saying that's not possible. But we have no right to destroy other people's dreams. 2 years later, we asked him as well. We said, what about your dream? We asked him about his status. And he said, well, now I realize the fact that I cannot see. It's maybe better that I don't become a taxi driver, but I can set up a taxi company and run it. And that's what empowerment is about, is to give people, you know, the trust to explore their own talents and their own limits and, well, hopefully even overcome theirs.
And how many kids have you been able to help through this program?
Altogether, we are now, it's over 300 students, and we started with, well, there was nothing for blind people, no education programs for blind people in Tibet, and 3 years ago, only 3 years ago, it was the first time in history that four blind students wrote their Gaokao, which is the university entrance exam, together with their sighted peers. And these were our students. So we had from elementary school, middle school, high school, and nowadays university, our blind students go into that program. So it's only a preparatory school where we prepare them so that they can go back and self-integrate or proactively integrate themselves into society.
And have you heard some of the stories of these kids? If they have not gone on to university, what have they been doing?
So a lot of them also quit school because they said it's boring. and instead they started their own businesses or their own social entrepreneurships. So we have a few who went never to school or who refused to go to a normal school system. And one is running her own kindergarten for blind and sighted kids. And the other one is running our school now when we are not there because we are mainly in India now. So it's very obvious that these kids who had nothing to lose except of their own dignity, who had only to win, who could take a risk because nobody was expecting anything from them. So whatever they did was a plus already. And these kids, they were so free and so full of dreams because we taught them how to dream, and also of ethics, because for us it was very, very important that they are growing up knowing that they come much further, not by not lying, by not finding excuses for things, by being ethical to each other, by wishing good to each other. And I think all that, all these values, very Christian values actually, but good values, these values help them to really become successful in life. And therefore, we don't call it a school, we call it a springboard.
Now, have you seen the different societies that these kids are from? Are they more accepting towards blind children or blind people? How has the attitude changed in society?
It has been a big change, because when we started, everybody believed that blind people cannot do anything. And now there is...
And also that it was a sin revisited on you from a past...
Exactly, absolutely.
Something that you did in another life.
And so now what happened is, I'll give you one example. There's a little boy, and this was Kumi, and Kumi was standing in our courtyard, and he was having a big smile on his face. And so I said, Kumi, what's up? And he said, I'm so happy. And you could tell, you know, he was radiating happiness. And we said, why? Because that's the first word they learn in English is because. So they have to think. So he says, because. And he gave it a little thought. He says, because I am blind. Mm. And then we said, why? And well, he was 9 years. And this boy said, well, I'm the only one in my village that can read and write. I'm the only one in the area surrounding my village that knows English, Tibetan, and Chinese. And I'm the only one in an area that's as big as Holland. And we've got this globe, this tactile globe, so he knows how big Holland is. And he says that knows that the world is round and that surfs on the internet and sends emails. And all that because I am blind. So when he now goes home, or back then when he went home, suddenly the perception of him being someone that doesn't know anything suddenly changed, because he knew a lot more than most people in the village. And that has been a great mindset shift that happened in many villages. Unfortunately, not everywhere yet, because Tibet is a huge area. And so, but definitely it happened in the villages where our students are from. And of course, in the main city, in Lhasa and in Shigatse, they're on the street walking with their canes, so they take part in daily life, and that's where the mindset shift definitely happened.
A very warm thanks there, and best wishes, of course, to Sabria Tenberken and to Paul Cronenberg, co-founders of Braille Without Borders.